And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM. We're the media for the 99%, not the 1%. As you well know, especially from our broadcasts in the last few weeks, we have been bringing you some of the earliest coverage of these massive strikes and demonstrations, the student movement and citizens movement in Quebec since April. We've been helping other programs with interviews. We've been covering this and quite aware of this since the beginning. And there's people that are on the ground in Quebec or from other parts of Canada that have been paying a lot of attention to these issues, covering them, helping organize them. And certainly one of our favorite guests, who has been on this program a number of times and is familiar to our listeners, that's Eve Engler, Canadian author and journalist. His most recent book is Lester Pearson's Peacekeeping, The Truth May Hurt, which he presented here at McMaster in the official Hamilton book launch. In fact, Eve, I think he's on the line with us today. Eve, how's it going?
Not bad. How about yourself, brother?
Well, things are pretty quiet here, relatively, here in Ontario as compared to Quebec, and you are a familiar voice for our listeners. You were here not too long ago at McMaster. Now, before we talk about the other things that are happening in Quebec, I should mention we don't always provide a direct link to your book here and where you can find all your books. I know there's a website that mentions some of the publishing and so forth. If people want to pick up your latest book about Lester Pearson's peacekeeping, where can they go?
The best place is probably Turning the Tide Bookstore, left-wing bookstore in Saskatoon, and their website is turning.ca. And if people want to, they can get it. They can get linked to that from my website, which is just eveengler.com.
That's right. If you want to know what's going on in this country in terms of foreign policy, history, on every subject, Haiti, Israel, peacekeeping, Eve has written all about it. He is a one-man printing press, in a sense, and his work is of such high quality. It is featured throughout universities and bookstores across Canada and elsewhere. So, Eve, we're glad that you of all people are in Quebec, because I know you're capable of analyzing this quite well. You were on the Taylor Report back just 2 days ago on Monday, but even since then, so much has changed because things are moving so quickly. And I must apologize for interviewing you, because I know your voice must be tired out. It was shouting at big protests, and to be heard at that one, you must have had to yell very loud.
Yeah, no, yesterday for myself was the culmination of 5 days a row of demonstrations. And in Montreal, there was something towards, I can't say for sure, but certainly hundreds of thousands. Some people say upwards of 500,000. The low end, the cops are saying at least 100,000. Huge, huge demonstration. And that's important to know. This is a mass demonstration that follows on nightly demonstrations, daytime demonstrations, but for the last month there have been nightly demonstrations that are often reaching up to maybe as many as 50,000 on last Friday night. About 12 hours, 14 hours before this massive demonstration that got lots of media attention yesterday, there were as many as 10,000 of us, probably somewhere between 5 and 10,000 of us, that marched all the way from the eastern part of the city all the way up into Westmount, obviously, you know, the rich part of Montreal, went right by, got as close as we could to Jean Charest's house, except for the line of riot cops that were stopping them from going down his street. So this demonstration yesterday is really the culmination of months now of strikes and demonstrations. The police, Montreal police, were talking about 250 demonstrations in Montreal alone since the strike has started. And then there's been demonstrations, many, many, many demonstrations in Sherbrooke and in Hull and Quebec City and Victoriaville, etc.
Wow, you live in an age where I guess a demonstration of 50,000 is considered small, much like the small demonstrations of just a few tens of thousands that you were participating in. No, I've seen the pictures. I heard it takes the Tuesday demo protest took more than 3 hours for the crowd to pass any particular point. So the estimates had been 400,000, even 500,000, as you've indicated. Certainly, it was perhaps, at least on Tuesday, the biggest event, the biggest thing happening in North America. And there's great events happening right now with Occupy and with the Chicago NATO protest, which is spectacular and big supporter. We're watching that. Everyone is paying attention to the coverage by Democracy Now! And so forth. But at least on Tuesday, for sure, that was the biggest thing happening on the continent.
For sure. And it's also important to note that the demonstration on Tuesday, every person, except for a very small contingent of about maybe 700 people, every single person was breaking the law. The route was not approved. There was an approved route that certain organizations had given to, not the main organizers of the demo, but certain organizations have given to the police, the main student federation that is calling on people to disobey the new special law that the Charé government has brought in, will refuse to give the route of the march and diverge from what was supposedly the itinerary that other groups had put forward. And CLAS said this was the largest act of civil disobedience in Canadian history. I don't know enough about all previous acts of civil disobedience to suggest that's right or not, but it makes sense to me that 250,000, 300,000 people, all of us, technically, according to the Bill 78, should have been fined between $1 and $5,000 for doing that march. All the CLAS, as well as other organizations that were involved in the demonstration, should have been fined up to $125,000 under the new special law. So it's important to note that not only was this an insane number of people on the street, it was actually an incredible number of people defying the law in an act of civil disobedience of incredible proportions.
Yeah, just imagine if they had fined everyone, that would be a good way to cover the budget shortfalls. No, don't give them any ideas. I guess the civil disobedience is a reaction to Bill 78. I understand Quebec finds it very insulting. They had first of all said that any protest of a certain size, 10 people, or any grouping of gathering of, say, 10 people or 8 people or whatever would be considered a riot, and then they moved it up. But moving it up, I guess, was not sufficient. The sitting at the bus stop, if you have a number of people that are accidentally together at the bus, that could have been considered a riot. So people were phoning the police to register their parties and demonstrations and everything that was happening.
Yeah, well, the government, the Bill 78, is incredibly repressive special law that was brought into place explicitly to attempt to crush the student movement. And it has a whole number of different aspects to it. As you were alluding to initially, one of the aspects to it was that any demonstration of more than 10 people that wasn't registered with the police 8 hours in advance and registered, give very specifics about who was going to be there, how many people were going to be there, where it was going to go, and then the police would have the opportunity, the choice to define the route or to deny the permit. That was increased to 50 because the number of 10, of course, was so outrageous that even, you know, little groups of kids who were going to school or to a birthday party would often fall under the number of 10 or be above the number of 10. That was increased to 50. But that's one element of the repressive. Another element of this Bill 78, this repressive bill, is that any demonstration within 50 meters, it outlaws any demonstration within 50 meters of the outer grounds of an educational institution, of CEGEP or a university. And the point of that was to stop the pickets that the CEGEPs and the university associations that are on strike were implementing. Now, the part of that was that's what they said the point was, at least, and that's very dubious on its own level. But the reality is that downtown Montreal has educational institutions in so many different spots that effectively any march in downtown Montreal becomes illegal because you will pass an educational institution at some point during the march. So that's another element of this Bill 78 that's just outrageous. Another element is the fact that they have the ability to fine student associations up to $125,000 for the first offense, double that for the second offense, that in any way promote what is defined as an illegal demonstration. And it actually puts the onus on the institutions to prove that they weren't promoting it. Usually you obviously have to, you have a reasonable doubt, you have to prove that they were involved in it, but in the way the wording of Bill 78 is in fact puts the onus the other way around. And so student federations that had maybe posted some link on their website to a demonstration that then was defined as illegal by the police, they would then be subject to fines of up to $125,000.
Yes.
Just by posting on the website. And so the effect of that was the main student federation that has had all these demonstrations over the past couple of months on their website, they had to immediately take down their website under threat that they would be fined out of existence. And what they did very creatively was to create I don't know if it was them, but I would presume it was somebody close to them, put up another website, a hidden website or a website where people could be anonymous, where these different demonstrations were posted, and they mocked it, and they said we're calling people to not go to these demonstrations, anyways, as a sort of joke, So this Bill 78 is just an incredibly repressive bill that the government has brought in an attempt to crush the more than 3 months long student strike, and it as what we saw yesterday, it has backfired, and the Sharia government is in fact, rather than quelling the student movement, it has just expanded the fight and has given more fuel, if you like, to those who are not happy with the state of Quebec society. Quite frankly, with the state at this point, it's quite frankly with the state of capitalism, we'll see where things go over the next few weeks.
Yes, it's quite different than the image especially English Canadian newspapers painted for us in terms of support for Charest and the students and so on. Now, with Bill 78 there, I know the initial maps. I saw the first maps which showed the proximity to educational institutions and the areas that would therefore be no-go. And you just have this red swath throughout the city, right through the center, very difficult to hold demonstrations under those rules. Then I saw there was a response by someone who reworked that map into a middle finger, saying no to that legislation. There's been a lot of mockery over some of the directives from this government. I think some of the parts of this bill have the effect of pushing certain things into the underground or where people can't be harmed for expressing their opinions. In terms of, you talked about the system, you mentioned capitalism. If this strike, as we've pointed out before on the program, it's not about tuition primarily. It's largely about debt, but it's about systems. It's about the system that Quebec had envisioned for itself in terms of education and ability and opportunity. And the imposition of the neoliberal system on them. And the language from the student organizers has been quite explicit about that. I think you had leaders of CLASS and others. They were talking about the bourgeoisie in this case, the global investor class, and trying to restructure Quebec and the students and the youth and the future generations to act within a model that's more profitable for them. So I think Quebec can recognize this more easily than certain other places, because some of the elements of that seem perhaps more foreign.
Yeah, I mean, CLASS's proposal vis-a-vis they actually proposed not just an opposition to the increased tuition that the Sharia government's trying to impose, but they actually propose free education. And they have fairly elaborately defined ways of funding that, and that includes increasing taxes on banks, and actually quite modest tax on banks would lead to all the money that would be necessary to move towards a free education. So there's a clear sort of macro analysis of it's not some sort of free education is some sort of disconnected from broader economic political policy, but they lay out very clear kind of proposals. And I think what is very important to note about what's going on, and there's also another component about sort of the vision of education. Is education just about becoming a worker and getting a certain skill that could get one a job, or is it about something bigger in terms of forming human beings into being critical thinkers, into sort of expanding themselves culturally, socially, and there's obviously lots of pressure towards education just being simply sort of a commodity that's about, you know, getting ahead in the sense of, you know, economically speaking. And I think the proposal that most people who are involved in the student strike, they're seeing education as something bigger than just about getting a job and you know, the sort of commodification of education like that, but rather the larger social element.
Yes.
One element I think is really important to point out at this point is that one of the things I think that one of the effects of what's happened here, the Sharia government has basically, I mentioned this in a Facebook post, the Sharia government has basically spurred on or created, if you like, tens of thousands of anti-capitalist activists in Quebec. That's the effect. We marched on Monday night, marched through Westmount. The chants were about playing off of one of the chants being used a lot about, but basically yell louder so the rich have nightmares.
Yeah.
One of the chants that people were making as we went by these monstrous multi-million dollar homes in Westmount. During the Tuesday demonstration, where this mass, you know, hundreds of thousands of people were out in the street, there was a repeated demonstration. And I'm not talking about among supposed like left-wing, you know, sort of groups but among the broad swath of people who were at the demonstration, chanting things like anti-capitaliste, you know, defining themselves as anti-capitalist.
Yeah, I can't help but think of the time. I think it was early in the Occupy movement. Some group in the States took a bus tour. They took people on a free bus tour of the homes of the 1%.
Yeah. But exactly, that's what's developing here. You have mass consciousness developing about some of the systemic forces that, you know, push for increased tuition. It's not just some sort of abstract, okay, there's Jean Charest, out of nowhere, this bad guy has pushed for increased tuition. It's something much more complicated than that, of course. And that's what people, as the strike has played out, as people have demonstrated more, as people have become more and more politicized, larger and larger numbers of people are coming to understand that and are not just talking out. Now, at the demonstration on Tuesday, tuition was not even, I heard very few chants about tuition. Most of the chants were either sort of macro and, you know, analysis of, you know being anti-capitalist or pushing for one chant calling for very left-wing unions, or they were chants defying the new Bill 78. So the question has become so much broader than just tuition, which is the issue that launched the whole movement, but the where we're at now is so removed from that simple question, and it's very much more about a whole questioning of social priorities, of political decision making, of economic inequality, etc.
Yes, it's not just about a tuition squeeze. We have to ask, why are students and families feeling squeezed in the first place? And what we're seeing is, you know, the culmination of this global capital mobility, where they can move jobs all around the world. They're not job creators; they're job destroyers in many senses. So you have the situation now where it's much harder just to get some kind of entry level job, and at the same time, the education you require to get that job has become more and more expensive. So people are feeling the squeeze. It didn't just come out of nowhere, and the organizing didn't come out of nowhere either. There's a quote from one of the student leaders that said, in reference to our 1%, they said, "These people are a single elite, a greedy elite, a corrupt elite, a vulgar elite, an elite that only sees education as an investment in human capital, that only sees a tree as a piece of paper, and only sees a child as a future employee." And I think this is the problem for all the Margaret Wentz and the Globe and Mail writers, that the students are learning something. The education system or our social system is producing some knowledge on these subjects, and perhaps that's too dangerous for them.
For sure. There's two points to that. One, for sure, there has been just an incredible knowledge. Like, I guarantee you that the people who have been participating in in the strikes and mobilization have learned a lot more over the past 3.5 months than they would have if they were in class. In terms of just how society works and people, the growing consciousness of how the corporate media functions, the biases there, the growing consciousness of how the police force functions when the establishment is threatened, and the level of repression of in recent days, and I can maybe go into that in a bit of detail, what happened on Friday, Sunday, Saturday night, of just incredible levels of repression. But to get into the different topic where the question is going, is the freak out in English Canada is of pretty intense proportions. The National Post has gone out of its way, front page, day after day, about what's going on in Quebec in the worst, most propagandistic ways. The Toronto Star running is a major editorial, and this is the most left-wing of the daily newspapers, denouncing the anarchy in Quebec. Basically across, you know, CBC, Chantal Hébert in the Toronto Star there, and also a CBC commentator. Very, just the hostility towards the Quebec student movement is incredible. And I think it's at the end of the day what it comes down to is they understand that this is a real challenge to the neoliberal economic model of more and more for the small few, less and less for the majority. And so they understand this is a challenge. This is a major challenge taking place in North America to that neoliberal economic model. And concurrent with that, there is just there's a level of defiance, just a general level of defiance of authority that threatens the establishment. And so that's why you see that reflected in just over the top, oftentimes totally absurd attacks against the student movement, you know, attacks about how this is just spoiled brats, as if the people who go on strike and put their whole semester on the line, put the money they've paid for the classes often on the line, knowing that they've already paid, let's say, $1,300 for a semester, and they're not going to get that money back, and they're going to lose more money on a personal level than it would cost to just accept the tuition increases. But these people, out of conviction, believe it's so important to maintain accessible education. Yeah, that they are willing.
They're like the only people with a long-term view. As you said, it would be cheaper for them now to just submit in the short term. But they understand that there's a long-term issue for them and for the 2012 high school graduates and the next generation. So if they don't act now, people, ordinary people, are going to have to pay more in the future. So they have the long-term outlook.
Exactly, and so the way the media has tried to portray this as spoiled brats, I mean, it's comical.
Well, you know, the Globe and Mail, I think it was the Globe and Mail today, one of the lead articles was, "Are our youth lazy and overprivileged?" or something like that. So this is what you get. There's been for some time a preemptive attack by the 1% on the growing unemployed, challenged-faced generation. And it's at the same time where our elites are so greedy that they have private jets, private aircraft, which would have been considered science fiction and laughable 40 years ago. You said today that business owners would have their own personal jet aircraft that they could fly around all over the world. No one would have believed you. But here, this is the divide in wealth we're living in, and the people that have made the crime of being born and graduating high school are now being attacked for wondering about their job prospects.
For sure. And what is important about what's going on in Quebec, for outside of Quebec, is that I think it's inspiring people in many parts of the world, mostly in English Canada, but elsewhere in the world, to challenge the dominant economic paradigm, to say this is not inevitable, this is about social policy. We can take some of this wealth that the elite have been accumulating, and that can be used to pay for social programs, can be used to pay for initiatives that benefit the majority. So I think that the Quebec movement has become an inspiration to lots of people arrests in English Canada, and even elsewhere in the world.
Yes, I have to agree with that, and we've been seeing the stories on that. I didn't get a chance to mention it on previous programs, but Ontario, there's been good signs. I know, I think it was the U of T students were among the first to give $20,000 to the student unions in Quebec. And then my former local here at McMaster, 3906, donated $10,000 to the strike. Very nice of them. And QP3903 at York has endorsed the movement, the popular movement in Quebec. So there's good things like that, and there's been a coordinated effort by hopefully we're seeing the beginnings of some coordination in the country. Sid Ryan has called for support. I know some private sector and public sector unions have been getting on board on this. So there's this growing recognition of the fact that the struggle in Quebec affects us. It's part of the same situation we're facing in Canada and also in the United States, very similar in many respects. So it's good to see that. And making this all happen, of course, that was no mean feat. And I know you have experience with organizing and writing about activism. Even that protest on Tuesday and then the last 5 days required a considerable amount of planning. So I guess we can thank you for that. We haven't heard the full story on that, but when people are sharing these events and organizing in the U.S. and the rest of Canada, what kind of strategies or what can they look to do? What were you doing to make these sort of things happen?
Well, I can't personally. I've been more of a bystander in the organizing. I've just, you know, showed up to demonstrations, so I can't, was not really involved in that at the level of getting things going. But what I can tell you is that one of my former roommates, Natty Housefather, she's been working on this issue, specifically about the strike, for over a year now. So while it has blown up recently and you know, certainly making lots of headlines over the past weeks and even months, before the strike even started, there had already been towards a year of organizing, oftentimes small meetings, and I had many discussions with Nadia about all kinds of the fears going back to last summer about, you know, where things were going to go and how it was impossible. Was it going to be possible to get the strike going? Stuff like that. So, you know, most, while it now has become an absolute mass movement of epic proportions, it didn't begin as such. It began with, quite frankly, pretty small groups organizing, mostly organizing locally in their schools, in their cégeps, sort of a community college type thing, at their associations and universities. And the real basis of the organizing, the real basis, the power of the movement. Now, you know, the major demonstrations and the night demonstrations and all kinds of civil disobedience that they've participated in is obviously an important part of the power of the movement. But the real basis of the movement are the general assemblies at the local level, at this institutional level, at the CEGEP, at the department, at the university. So Political Science Association at Université du Québec à Montréal or at Concordia, voting to go on strike, in a very democratic process, having, you know, long debates, discussing the matters, and making the decisions. So I think it's important for people to understand that the basis of it is these highly democratic, general assemblies that happen at the local level in all the different institutions. And I think that ultimately, from a long-term standpoint, you know, there's differences, and obviously in Ontario, differences in BC, other places in the world. There's, you know, different traditions that have developed in Quebec than elsewhere on some of these things. But I think at the crux, the issue that's really important is that the way to be effective is to be very democratic and to have as high a participation as possible of in this case, students. I think the same thing largely goes when, in the case of workers and other struggles in that area, and other different sort of community and social movements. But really, it's the determination, the commitment of people organizing and then bringing a very hyper democratic process where as many as people as possible can participate and contribute. I think that's really the crux of the power, and in their capacity to shut down their institutions. And a lot of people sort of dismiss that. Well, it's not the workplace. There's not the power that there is at a workplace where you can shut down the means of production and the economic impact that can have. And it's true. In some ways, there are very different for students than it is for people, at a workforce. But there are also a lot. There is also lots of power they have in shutting down these institutions, and the difficulty that puts on the government in a whole series of different ways. So it really is at the crux. This is a movement of people who have been really committed for a long time, doing incredible work for a long time, and also being very democratic in their process of organizing.
Yes, and you know, I've heard among students here discussion of those assemblies. So it'll be nice to see what organizing methods people come up with here in English Canada and in the United States as well. So there you have it. I mean, you were there at the protest, 500,000 people perhaps. The whole city must have seemed deserted in all the buildings. I wonder if anyone was in them. You brought out a whole lot of people as something to see. Maybe we'll have more opportunities to see things like that. I guess you of all people know that when the Canadian government is up to something nasty, especially in Haiti or Afghanistan or in Quebec, we're, as citizens, among the last to know about it. People in other countries may know about it first. So we need to get information on these sorts of things. I guess the CLASS website is probably one place. You had mentioned there's some things going on with the web now. Where would you advise people to go to find more information about this?
There is a little bit of a limited nature. The CLASS website, Bloc en Lose, mostly in French. There are some issues with English. But for people who are interested in, at this point, following certainly a level of video, following some of the demonstrations, the Concordia University Television has been an amazing source of coverage of the demonstrations. Whether they're live, they have a live stream usually during the night demonstrations particularly, and they've been showing some of the brutality, the absolute incredible brutality of the police force, and also of some of the major demonstrations. And they have debates about different issues. They've been so successful that Michael Moore tweeted them, I think it was on Saturday night, and they had a huge spike up to 200,000 unique visitors that night. So a very successful, very good, bilingual, it's a combination English and French, is the Concordia University Television website. People can just punch in CUTV, Montreal, and that comes up real quickly in Google. You know, some of the other, just a general left-wing media outlets like Rabble.ca or the Montreal Media Co-op, the decent English language sources for some of the coverage. Montreal Media Co-op is quite a good source.
Well, I have to agree, and the Michael Moore thing was important. You know, I've been hearing from people who just felt demoralized, that they would never get affordable education or there'd never be movement on this issue. But of course, there is. People can catch those things from Michael Moore. There was even that solidarity protest in France. So you're doing a great job. Thanks so much. I know you have a hoarse voice because of all the yelling and the shouting and the demonstration. So we doubly appreciate that you're able to bring this to us. People need this kind of direct coverage. So Yves, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Keep up the good work.
Great. You too. Thanks, Yves. Bye-bye.
Take care.